barriers, the taller I become, the farther you take my rights away, the faster I will run. You can deny me, you can decide to turn your face away. No matter, 'cause there's something inside so strong. I know that I can make it, though you're doing me wrong, so wrong. You thought that my pride was gone. Oh no, something inside so strong.
That's poet, songwriter, musician, and singer Labi Siffre with Something Inside So Strong, an anthem he wrote in 1987 when he saw television coverage of white South African forces shooting at black children. But of course, the song speaks to injustice of all kinds. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead. It is Friday, January the 31st, the last day of the month, but our first discussion on a very unusual case. Six men who formed the core of Investigative Resource Planning Solutions, IRP Solutions, a small but tenacious black-owned software development company specializing in solutions for law enforcement agencies, believed they were on the brink of a multi-million dollar breakthrough after 2 years in the cutthroat business. They had developed a software solution for a major communications and coordination problem that law enforcement, national security, and intelligence agencies said affected not only the response to the 9/11 terrorist attacks, but to any such attacks and even day-to-day investigations. The FBI, with a budget allocation of almost $400 million and 3 years to upgrade its system, utterly failed. In a scathing report on FBI follow-ups, Glenn Fine, Inspector General of the U.S. Department of Justice, told the Senate Committee on Appropriations Subcommittee on Commerce, Justice, State, and the Judiciary that, quote, after more than 3 years, multiple missed deadlines, and a price tag of $170 million, that's the amount spent at that time, up until that time, the FBI still does not have an investigative case management system to replace the antiquated system. Further, we are not confident that the FBI has a firm sense of how much longer and how much more it will cost to develop and deploy a usable system, unquote. Fine said he disagreed with the FBI's assertion in its response to his draft report that the delays in deploying the system and the lack of an adequate management system, quote, do not have national security implications. Fine said, quote, to the contrary, we believe there is a critical need to replace the system to enable FBI agents and analysts to effectively perform the FBI's mission, unquote. Short story, the program was scrapped. And there came, without any warning, on February the 9th, 2005, 21 armed FBI agents who swarmed IRP's Colorado City offices under a warrant, they said, to gather evidence of fraud. And thus began, for the six men, a nightmare in which their company was destroyed. They were convicted on highly contentious charges in a most unusual federal trial and currently are in federal prison, serving between 7 and 10 years each. This today is the first part of the story, and I say the first part because, as you know, I like doing things thoroughly. There's no reason to rush. And this is a case that we need to understand all the facets of. And to give us that tour through this incredible case, which I just learned of very recently, in fact, just last week, I had not heard about this case. And I found it very odd. And my research tells me every time I look for more and more things, something here is just not adding up. And they haven't been adding up for a number of people who, in fact, launched an organization simply to focus on justice in this case. We will meet Samuel Thurman, Ethel Lopez, and Cliff Stewart. Samuel Thurman, thank you for joining us. He is a president of the organization I just referred to called A Just Cause. Ethel Lopez is vice president of the same organization. And Cliff Stewart is the brother of one of the convicted men, Clinton Stewart, who is serving time still in a federal prison. Thank you all for being with us. Sam Thurman, may I start with you?
Sure.
Tell us
why. Thanks for having us on the program.
Oh, not at all. Thank you so much. How and why did you found, why is this organization necessary? How did it come into being?
Yatrice, that's an excellent question. And, you know, we have to credit it actually to the guys who are referred to as the IRP6. And, Yatrice, if I may, we always like to, you know, put the names to that so that they're not just categorized as the IRP6, but we're talking about Gary Walker, who is the CEO of IRP Solutions, David Banks, who was the COO, Kendrick Barnes, Clinton Stewart, Demetrius Harper, and Dave Zerpolo. And so the guys were actually instrumental in setting up A Just Cause as a result of, and I appreciate you laying out the story of how the company started in 2003, and in 2005, the company was raided by the FBI. Now, after the raid and the subsequent activities with the indictment, the investigation, the trial, and all the things preceding the trial, the guys realized that, you know, as we grew up in this country to understand how the justice system is supposed to work, we were naive to that. And the system does not work as we have been brought to understand it. So some of the things that were happening to the IRP6, you know, they wanted to bring awareness to that. They wanted to make people aware of the fact that, hey, there are some very uncouth things that are happening to us in our case. And then as we started to investigate it, realized that this was not an anomaly. that the same type of thing was happening in other cases. That's why, you know, we hear of people who've been incarcerated for 15, 20, 25 years before their name can be cleared, and they had done no wrong. So the guys established a just cause to bring awareness to their case, but then they realized that it is not just about their cases, but it's about other cases that the same type of thing happens where, and in this particular case, it's a corporate debt collection case that got criminalized.
All right, we'll get to the details. Ethel Lopez, Vice President of A Just Cause, I see in your bio that you are actually a retiree, and your full-time occupation now is A Just Cause. Why do you feel so passionately about this?
Well, you know what? I have known all of these guys, the IRP 6, for more than 20 years. We attend the same church. You know, our kids grew up together and things like that. And I know the character of these men. I know that they are very hardworking, honest Christian family men. And, you know, I felt compelled to do something when I heard about all this stuff that was taking place with them. I've worked for the government for over 30 years. I was active duty, and then I went into the civil service side. So I know a lot about what happens, you know, within the government and so forth. But I just felt compelled, and because these are my brothers, these are my families, okay, I felt like I had to do something. And if nothing else, I can get out there, I can write a letter, I can go visit a congressman or make some phone calls, I can do whatever, you know, possible to help out, to show that these guys have not done anything wrong and that they have been railroaded by this corrupt government system.
And Cliff Stewart, the brother of Clinton Stewart, one would say, well, you have a vested interest because your brother is one of the men who have been railroaded into the federal prison. But is there anything else that compels your involvement in A Just Cause? Is Cliff there?
Crime.
Oh.
And was spending time in prison because of a wrongdoing, I would accept that. I was taught to respect the law, respect the government of our country. Is, you know, the law is for the lawless. And so I would respect that. But because of the fact that he committed no crime, nor did the rest of these other five men, that's why I fight it. And because looking at it, you know, I see how our government here in America, we always say, you know, we have the best judicial system. We have the best laws and all this, but when we've done our studies at A Just Cause and seeing what America's tops in incarceration. We have more people in prison than any other country, and yet we have no rehabilitation for the people when they get out of prison. So absolutely, I am fighting because my brother is one of the individuals, but my dog in the fight is the fact that I'm going against injustice on any hand and for anyone.
Well, let's get a more detailed picture of the men involved. Who would like to do that to give us an idea of how to personalize these men, put some character to their names?
Well, you, Truce, I can start and with it. And as I stated, you know, Gary Walker, he was the CEO of IRP Solutions Corporation. And Gary is also the chief architect of the Case Investigative Lifecycle Software, and we commonly refer to it as SILC. The acronym is CILC. And so when Gary developed this software, he actually started off with a smaller solution. He was approached by the Sheriff's Department in Colorado Springs to develop something for them. But then as, you know, he saw a need in the law enforcement arena, if you will, whereby a solution like that could apply to several different law enforcement agencies at different levels. So he began to, he was actually approached by other folks at larger agencies as well. It eventually evolved to, as you were stating earlier, where IRP was approached by the Department of Homeland Security for a solution that was on a grander scale. Gary, as an individual, a genius, as far as developing a solution like this, no one could do what Gary did. Gary had a presidential appointment to the U.S. Air Force Academy. He didn't finish at the academy by choice because of the fact that he wanted to fly, and he was not going to have that opportunity to fly. So he pursued his Bachelor of Science degree in computer engineering through the University of Colorado. Gary also worked in various industries in the IT industry in Colorado, to include working on programs like Ronald Reagan's Star Wars program. He also did presentations for, at that time, Prime Minister Margaret Thatcher, and then also for the Prime Minister of France. He was part of teams that did that. So by all rights, Gary is a genius, and you know, folks would see other things as to how the government prosecutor would have wanted to portray him. But as we dig deeper into the story, and I appreciate you taking time to do it, and the way you want to approach it, Yatrice, we'll find out a whole lot more about it. David Banks, also over at the time, over 15, nearly 20 years of experience as a database engineer. He worked for many companies, to include companies like Oracle. David is a Navy veteran. All of the guys are patriotic. David finished, I believe, first in his class in air traffic control school for the Navy. And then he went on to do a few years of service there, and afterwards went into the commercial industry. Kendrick Barnes, also an IT professional with many years, I think over 10, 15 years of experience at that time, also as a database engineer, and worked for many major companies. Demetrius Harper, the same thing. Many years of experience as database engineer. Demetrius also was the CEO of DKH Enterprises, which was a partner company to IRP Solutions. And so we'll, you know, expound upon that as well. And then you have Clinton Stewart, like Cliff was stating, that's Cliff's brother. Clinton also spent time in the Air Force. And Clint was an NCO. He worked in top secret and higher levels than top secret compartmentalized type projects, handling cryptology. And so, you know, a very trusted agent, if you will, within the government. And being able to operate in that arena, spent many years in the Air Force, both overseas as well as in the United States. Dave Zerpolo, he is an IT professional, a technology degree from Northwestern, I believe. And Dave Zerpolo was the Vice President of Professional Services for IRP Solutions. And Dave Zerpolo, many years of understanding how to put together programs and solutions that would benefit prospects and clients, and was well positioned to assist IRP Solutions to take the software to market.
And we have Demetrius.
I touched base on Demetrius. Demetrius is also a database engineer with I believe at the time over 15 years of experience, and he is the CEO of DKH Enterprises, which was a partner company with IRP Solutions. And as far as talking about the patriotism as well, you know, we talked about Gary and David and Clinton. Kendrick Barnes and Demetrius Harper, both of their fathers spent over 20 years of service to the United States Army. And so, you know, they saw the dedication in their dads as to, you know, what it takes to be a patriot and to support your country. And so, you know, these guys, even though they didn't do military service, they had an appreciation for people that do, and they definitely had appreciation for how IRP Solutions was positioned to help this country to ensure that the law enforcement had what it needed. One of the goals of Gary was to ensure that a tragedy like what occurred on 9/11 never occurred again. And although, and then as far as David Banks, he spent time in the Navy, but his dad also was an Army veteran with over 20 years of service to this country as well. So you have, you know, gentlemen here who, as Ethel said, you know, businessmen, ethical men, Christian men, family men, but also, I'll add to that, patriotic men.
Let's start with the period of 2003 to 2005. What was the company doing at that time?
In 2003, Utrecht, is when the company started, and that's when momentum really began to pick up. In the latter part of 2003, IRP Solutions was doing like any other company does. As I stated earlier, Gary saw the need, and we began, and I say we, I actually worked at IRP Solutions as well. And so I was working as Vice President of Sales. And so we were working to push the software out there, and just like any other startup company, pushing to get, you know, make others aware that you exist. We were doing demos on a weekly basis for law enforcement agencies at all levels. We were also trying to get into the federal space, of course. Well, we received a phone call from the Department of Homeland Security. And a program manager at that time was named Stephen Cooper. Mr. Cooper called and said that he had heard that IRP Solutions was working on a software application that may fit with what they were working on, and that they needed to see what we had to offer. We set up an online web demonstration initially. Mr. Cooper liked what he saw. IRP Solutions was invited to come to Washington, D.C. to do a demo for a working group at the time that was called CEE Working Group, and that was the Consolidated Enforcement Environment Initiative. That initiative included groups like the Department of Homeland Security, Secret Service, FBI, TSA, Federal Air Marshals, and you know, I commonly refer to it as the alphabet soup of federal law enforcement. Gary and David hit it out of the park when it comes to doing a demo. And so everyone really liked what they saw. The Department of Homeland Security at that time, they said, okay, can you make certain modifications? We want you to put a federal face on it. We want you to be able to accommodate anywhere from 20 to 40,000 agents at one time, because we're talking, you know, interagency activity here. And so Gary and David went about to, you know, structure a process or methodology whereby to make that happen. You have the federal government that's asking you to modify your software to accommodate their needs. In order to do that, IRP Solutions engaged the services of IT staffing companies. Now, we're not talking as far as staff augmentation. We're not talking, you know, someone that comes in and just helps to answer the phones or something like that. We're talking very specialized technology professionals who could help write software code, who could help test the software and so forth. Well, you know, things were not going as quickly as possible as you would think or as you would hope. And we're all familiar with how the federal government works. It's not, now we are for sure, that it doesn't move quickly. Even though, you know, they may say, we're putting you in for a pilot project, which they did. The Department of Homeland Security had talked about or had approached IRP Solutions and talked about doing a $12 million pilot project. The Department of Homeland Security also asked for quotes from IRP for certain components of the software. One of the main components that they were looking for at the time was the confidential informant component, because that addressed issues that were cited and highlighted in the 9/11 Commission report. Utrecht, that particular component by itself was quoted to the Department of Homeland Security at $100 million. Now, we're talking about a software solution that had 18 components. And so we're talking one component was $100 million. Well, when business didn't turn as quickly as possible, then some invoices went slow pay, the link with, as far as invoices to the payments to the staffing companies. That's when the accusation of wrongdoing started creeping up, and I'll let Clip get into how it really developed and took off with regard to saying that IRP was a scam and that they weren't a legitimate business and that it was not a viable product, and being accused of all this wrongdoing, which there's nothing farther from the truth. That led to, on February 9th, 2005, IRP Solutions being raided by over 20 agents of the FBI.
All right. Cliff, we'll get to you in just one second. I just want this discussed. This is a startup company. How was it funded?
Well, the funding was, you know, friends, family, everyone just scraping together what we had to, and even, you know, at times volunteering, saying, you know, we'll do what it takes to get the software developed. I mean, when you look at it, and like Sam said, you know, when you have a quote that is coming from the largest government agency in the country, speaking of Department of Homeland Security, and they ask for a quote for one of your modules, and that quote is worth $100 million, and all you have to do is deliver. I mean, that is exciting news for any entrepreneur, any small business, to say, hey, you know, one of our potential customers is looking to take on our flagship product, and our first sale will be for $100 million. That was very exciting, and we were all willing to do what it takes as far as working extra hours, doing volunteer work, and absolutely the executives were willing to go into debt to get this software developed. I mean, that's what it takes. That's the entrepreneurial spirit, is that I will work as hard as I must, and I will put my name on the line to get my product out to market, and that is the way that we went about doing it.
Well, it doesn't sound unusual. Any startup always is faced with the issue of capitalization. And
right.
In this business, which is seriously money-consuming, considering what you have to pay the engineers and the professionals at the rate that is charged, if you have to farm out the work and you have to call people in, you have to pay the prevailing wages that they earn, it is quite understandable that even as a startup, you have to do this, because looming right on the horizon are these lucrative contracts, and you already had gotten a pretty favorable reaction, and you had gotten indication that if you were able to do these tweaks, it was just about certain or very, very, very likely that you would land a contract.
Absolutely.
Okay.
I mean, when you look at, like Sam laid out, first off, we're doing business, we're marketing, and then you get a call from the Department of Homeland Security. I mean, we didn't reach out to them. They called and said, we've been told that you have software that Department of Homeland Security needs to see. We need you to do us a web demonstration, you know, so you do the go to my PC or whatever it was called back then, show them what you have, and then after that, then the Department of Homeland Security says, that looks good, now we need you and your team to get on a plane, come to Washington, D.C., and sit not only in front of us, but like Sam says, the alphabet soup of federal law enforcement, and we need you to put on this demonstration so that we can let them understand that there's a company that has software that meets the requirements of what we're looking for. And the more and more that they keep doing that, and they say, okay, well, that looked good, you guys hit it out the park, everybody who was there loved it, can you now put this federal face on it? And as this is happening, IRP Solutions, you know, all of us as a team are like, you know, this is great. This is the customer that everybody would hope to land. And even, you know, even when they went to Homeland Security and they came back and gave a report to everyone who was working there, and, you know, I don't know if we had mentioned it or not, but I as well did work at IRP Solutions. But when they came back and gave the report that, you know, the Stephen Cooper and Bill Witherspoon of Department of Homeland Security are basically telling them, hey, you guys are here where usually the big guys only come. This is where IBM shows up. This is where Lockheed Martin, this is where Bearing Point, SAIC, you know, Motorola, all of the big companies, you guys are basically sitting where they typically do, and you have the best product that we've seen to date. And so when you have that, you say, absolutely, we're going to go on a date. And we had Andrew Alvarelli, who is the owner of Remy Corporation, which is a staffing company in Denver, Colorado. You know, he was going to be an expert witness for IRP Solutions during the trial. And we talked to him about it, and he himself said, you know, with the entrepreneurial spirit, that is one of the things that you do. You say, I will take the risk. I will go in debt. I will put everything that I have on the line because I believe in what I'm doing. I believe in the product that I have. And that's supposed to be the American dream for us all, especially when it comes to small business. That is supposed to be the fuel that you know, basically gives America its power to move. Is the entrepreneurial spirit, the small businesses that go out there and say, we're on the cutting edge of something new, and we're going to do what it takes to bring that to pass.
And it should be noted that in that world, at that level, you are a rare species as an African-American-owned company.
Absolutely.
So that I know. Now, it is at this time, between 2003 and 2005, as you develop the company and as you're developing the solutions and the products that have great interest by the powers that could pay you very nicely if you delivered, you contracted with these placement agencies to get additional help. And understandably, you had a cash flow problem. How did you resolve this, or how was it going? How were you managing the debts that you were incurring with these agencies?
And that's the thing, Utris, is that, you know, some of the agencies, they were paid as contracted. And then some of them, the contracts were put in place saying, we do not have a cash flow. We are in marketing and negotiations trying to land a contract. You know, here's some of the demos that we've put on for Department of Homeland Security and written in the contract. I mean, this is when Sam says it's a debt collection case, that's exactly what it is, because even in some of the contracts, they were laid out that the terms were you will be paid at the sale of the software. So it's not like these staffing companies went in and, you know, with their eyes closed. They did, you know, a Dun & Bradstreet report, which is basically a credit check on a corporation. They knew what they were getting into, and they had to decide whether they wanted to take on the risk of saying we will basically staff, you know, these engineers for developing and testing the software if we're willing to do that for IRP Solutions. And to bring up Andrew Alvarelli again, he said that the way that IRP did business with these staffing companies, with himself being the CEO of a staffing agency, he said that is exactly how business is done with staffing agencies. They have to make the determination whether they are going to basically take on this risk. When you're looking at a small company, as you said, Utris, you're looking at, if we land this contract, you know, we can pay off our bills, and we also have lucrative profits at the back end of that. Well, those staffing agencies were looking at the same thing, is that if this small company lands this huge government contract, when their first sale is would be $100 million, and you're talking about software that is 18, you know, has 18 modules, one module is $100 million, so you have a solution that's pretty much worth $1.8 billion for one agency. And so the staffing companies are saying, yes, we want to be on board when more business comes down so that we are already embedded within IRP Solutions and, you know, we can help them to do business and bring on more staffing. And, you know, then the wheels of business continue to roll. And
did you have any legal action pending because of payment issues at that time?
Absolutely. You know, when some of these agencies didn't get paid, they said, well, we're going to have to basically turn it over to our legal department. And that's absolutely understood. And IRP Solutions never went the route to say that, there was no debt incurred. Absolutely, there was debt incurred, but there was no criminal aspect to that debt. It was always said, we will pay you when we get means to pay you. We're not going bankrupt. We have a product. We believe that product is viable, and also our Department of Homeland Security, New York Police Department, Philadelphia Police Department, they also believe this product is viable. We all know how slow the U.S. government does anything. They go into furloughs and don't pay their own employees because of how long it takes them to make a decision on funding anything. So it was, yes, some of the companies said, we'll have to take you to civil action, and that was done, and that was understood. And also, after the raid on IRP Solutions, one of the staffing agencies actually went to the FBI, and this is absolutely crazy, Utrecht, because one of the staffing companies went to the FBI and said, yes, I was doing business with this IRP Solutions company, and I need to see basically what the federal aspect is of this, of them, you know, is there any crime committed? Well, the FBI sends this company back a letter and says, basically, after we've done our investigation, we don't see, there's nothing FBI can do for you. This is a civil matter. You need to take it up under civil action. And it shows the disconnect between the FBI agency in Denver and the FBI agency here in Colorado Springs, because Colorado Springs pulls off the raid. The Denver office of the FBI tells the staffing company, this is a civil matter. You need to take it up in civil court. There's nothing the FBI can do for you. And so what we look at after that is, okay, if that is the case, and if that is the response from the FBI, then why did you guys raid IRP Solutions as a business? Well, before the raid, Bill Witherspoon of Department of Homeland Security had told IRP Solutions, be careful when you're dealing with these other bigger companies, these companies like IBM and Motorola, Bearing Point, SAIC, that are these large government contractors, because they were sending these large businesses to IRP Solutions and saying, you need to partner with this small business because they have the product that DHS is looking for. And the meanwhile, IRP was told, be careful when these large companies come to you because they are known for stealing people's software and leaving you hanging. So when we look at it and we say, well, the FBI comes in and they raid the business and they're saying, well, the affidavit for the search warrant says this is a purported software development company, meaning they don't believe that there's any software there, although John Smith, who was the special agent in charge of the raid, he had been to DHS, he had been to NYPD, had interviewed them, and had seen that, you know, they told him they had seen the software. Yes, they had seen demos. They knew that there was a product that IRP Solutions had. He pulls off the raid anyway, but they come in where the search warrant says they're looking for financial records. They leave all the financial records, but they copy every piece of data off of every computer in the business. And you're talking about the development servers, the test servers. They go after intellectual property. And it's like, well, why are you collecting all this stuff if you believe that this is just a front company with no software? And also, if you're looking for financial records. But it brings us back to what the officials at Department of Homeland Security told us, is that these companies will steal your software. And so we look at it and say that must have been what they were going after, because their response to the staffing agency is that this is a civil matter. There's no criminal issue here.
But if I were to understand the layer under what you just said,
mm-hmm.
you're suggesting, or at least I'm reading, I'm intimating, that this raid was a hit by the FBI taking on an assignment of some rogue company and transforming a civil matter into a federal matter in order to facilitate a raid on your office, in order to get access to what they believed might have been your top secret stuff, your programs. Is that what I'm hearing?
That's exactly what you're hearing. I don't mean to imply, and I don't mean to lay it out in a roundabout way. Absolutely, what I'm saying is that they came in to steal the software, because when you look at it, Utrecht, IRP Solutions had basically contracted out subject matter experts that had over 20 years of experience and federal law enforcement. One of the individuals had worked at Immigration, then Customs Enforcement. His name was Gary Hilberry. He wrote an affidavit to the same said special agent in charge, John Smith, who was in charge of the raid. He wrote an affidavit to John Smith saying, I am a subject matter expert working at IRP Solutions. I've seen the software. It is viable for federal, state, and local law enforcement. He was under contract to provide his consulting services until and get paid when the software sells. This affidavit John Smith had in hand from not just any layperson, not just somebody out, you know, on the street. This is a federal agent with over 20 years of experience who could spot fraud, who could spot a front organization, who could spot criminal activity better than any of us, better than anybody that I know, because that was his job for over 20 years. He has this affidavit from this man, and he still creates an affidavit to get a search warrant from a federal judge, and he's still saying this is a company that is just a front organization saying that they're producing software. But then when the raid happens and you claim that you're looking for paperwork between the staffing companies and IRP Solutions, which is ridiculous anyway because the staffing companies had copies of these contracts and financial information anyway. But then when you come in and you leave that data sitting there, you know, it's a filing cabinet marked financials. Why would you go to every computer? I mean, when you go to the janitor's computer, you go to every developer's computer, every tester's computer, everybody who had anything to do with the software, and they copy all of the data from all of those computers and leave the financial records alone. It's not my theory of what they were going after. This is exactly what happened, and I have to follow the trail of breadcrumbs. I mean, that is where the evidence says they were trying to steal the software.
Now, interestingly, the raid on February the 9th, 2005, comes right in the midst of an assessment of the performance of the FBI's own program to upgrade its system. And it had come under blistering attack in Congress, in the U.S. Senate, for basically wasting a lot of money, hundreds of millions of dollars, and blowing 3 years on a program that, in effect, as the Inspector General said, just wasn't going anywhere and eventually was scuttled.
Yes,
is there a feeling, I mean, this is my reporter's brain ticking here, might there have been some incentive to find out, since their program was being targeted and they were very embarrassed? It was a scathing hearing, and I have the transcript of it, that the FBI would so openly be attacked for its incompetence, and they might have gotten wind, well, we know of this company over here that has something, maybe we can say, well, we've been working on this all the time, and this is as far as we got, and what we have is workable, using the captured information from IRP.
That is exactly, I mean, that is very astute of you to notice that. Because the situation that you're speaking of is when former FBI Director Robert Mueller had to stand before Congress, the Senate, the Judiciary Committee, saying, we have spent $425 million of the taxpayers' dollar on this software called Virtual Case File that has, in essence, failed. We have nothing to show for that $425 million. I mean, you're talking about almost half a billion dollars on one piece of software that has completely and utterly failed, and they had to scrap it. They had to take it and throw it in the trash. It was worthless. But when you look at, if you look at that transcript, you see where Director Mueller is saying we're kind of looking at some commercial off the shelf packages, which there were none. If you spent 3 years building one and there was a commercial off the shelf version, you never would have gone down that road. And then he makes a statement that is very telling and speaks to what you're saying, Utrecht, is he says, we will have a product within a year. And you look at it, you took 3 years to build absolutely nothing, smoke and mirrors. You had to throw that away, but now you can make the claim that in a year you'll have something in hand that satisfies satisfies Congress, satisfies the American people. And just like you said, you know, it's like almost like we're going to take what we took, we're going to try to stand it up, and we're going to try to reconcile any piece of our reputation as an agency who can do something with some level of competence. And that is the only conclusion that we can come to. When you come in and you try to steal all of the software, all we can say is you tried to steal the software. We don't have any other conclusion.
I want to ask a question about the warrant. Specifically, what did the warrant say was the reason for the raid?
Well, the warrant, as I mentioned, they said that IRP Solutions was a purported software company, a company that's claiming they're creating software, but they're not. And they're using that that claim to get the staffing companies to pretty much come in and staff people into the building, which, I mean, it really makes no sense, because it's not like any of the money that the staffing companies paid out was filtered through IRP Solutions. The money went to the staffed consultants, the people who actually did the work. If the staffing company, I mean, if you take it till its to its basic, you know, layout of how the industry works, let's do something very simple. You have someone who comes in and you say, okay, I'm getting too busy. I need basically a secretary. Come in, answer my phone, take notes, and make coffee. So the staffing company sends in a wonderful, delightful person, and then the staffing company basically pays that person for the work that they do. Once you say, yes, this individual was here for 40 hours this week, they took phone calls, they gave me the proper messages, they made the coffee properly, I'm satisfied with the work that they did, and I sign a timesheet saying how many hours they worked that week. The staffing company would pay that individual for those hours worked. Well, that's the same way it happened at IRP. Of course, you had other, you know, highly skilled professionals and engineers, but they filled out timesheets for the hours that they worked, the work that they did, and the staffing companies paid them directly. So you ask, where does the IRP executives gain anything by this so-called scamming of the staffing company, or getting them to, you know, take on these projects? What do they gain? I mean, there's no monetary gain for any of the IRP executives. So it's totally ridiculous that they would come in with these type of charges and say that anything but business was going on. And when you look at the indictment on this mail fraud and wire fraud, it basically lays out typical business happenings. Like, you know, they had a phone call with this company. This company sent in a contract over the mail. IRP Solutions signed this contract and faxed it back to them. And they call that mail fraud? They call that wire fraud? This is just everyday business. And that's why we say all the time that a just cause has to bring awareness to this, because if they did it to IRP Solutions, they can do it to anybody and say, you sent this, your invoice in the mail, you committed a federal crime because you sent your timesheet via mail or over a fax machine or an email. Now, that's a federal crime because the government wants to call it that. That is not the way that our justice system was set up.
Sorry, Sam, go ahead, please.
Sure, I was just going to add to what Cliff was stating and to your question of, you know, what did the warrant charge? And to add to what Cliff was stating, basically, you know, they were stating that IRP Solutions was set up basically for the express purpose of scamming or bilking staffing companies. But the twist that they put on it was that it was done under the cloak of, as Cliff stated, a company that is purportedly developing software. So Agent Smith, who got the warrant and signed the warrant affidavit, he's basically stating that this is a front company. This company is really not developing software. They don't even have a software. And so they're engaging these staffing companies, and they're getting this money from these staffing companies. But like Cliff said, money was not being paid to IRP Solutions from the staffing companies. The staffing companies were paying the consultants who they were placing at IRP. So, you know, once you substantiate the fact that IRP is in fact developing software, that it does have legitimate prospects and customers in all of these major areas, then that invalidates that warrant. And all of this information, Utrice, Special Agent John Smith knew that before he got a judge to sign off on that warrant. That's why it sounds like what it is. It is sinister. And does it sound like it's some sort of conspiracy under the hood? It looks exactly what it sounds like. And like Cliff was saying, you know, cutting right to the chase, yeah, something else is behind this.
Well, we will leave it here for the moment because we got a really good start in understanding the complexities of this case. And we will go next round on the legal questions and the court case itself. But I want to ask you, Ethel, how can people learn more about A Just Cause?
Well, we have our website out there, which has really all of the information in reference to the IRP 6 case. And that is www.freetheirp6.org. That website has everything that anybody possibly needs to know about this case. And as far as A Just Cause, go to www.a-justcause.com.
This is great. So far, I mean, in looking at the materials and doing a little bit more research on my own, there is something about this case that just doesn't smell right. And it is worth discussing openly because, I mean, this is happening in the open. For example, who was satisfied that I'm talking on the federal side, who was satisfied that this warrant was actually warranted for part of fine. I mean, you have to prove your case somehow to just say, hey, sign this warrant for me. I need to get a warrant to get in here. It should not suffice in a case where people's lives literally are on the line, their entire company's on the line, the people working with them are all on the line. This is a pretty high-handed way of operating. And so far what we're learning is that this company was targeted for some reason. We will get to that in our next round. But I want to thank you, Samuel Thurman, Ethel Lopez, and Cliff Stewart, for coursing us through this labyrinth today and making it perfectly understandable so that when we get deeper and deeper into the case, we can start connecting these dots. So I hope that I'll be able to call and we'll get another day scheduled next week when we can return to this discussion and flesh it out some more.
Absolutely.
Awesome.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you all. And thank you for being with me today and learning about this case. It's an extraordinary case on so many levels, and I encourage you to visit the website, justcause.com, and learn some more background. Of course, if I might say so myself with great pride, the discussions we will be having will augment or add to what is already stated there. But, of course, we're getting in real time more information that you can't get anyplace else. And, of course, that's why you listen to this program, isn't it? That's right. I ask and answer my own questions. So thank you all. You can absolutely reach me and make your comments known at leadstories@gmail.com. And you can also do it on Facebook at Lead Stories with Utrice Lead. Stay tuned. Keep it right here. Coming up next is Richard Martin's Wake Up Call. See you on Monday, same time.
Brothers and sisters, when they insist we're just not good enough. Oh, we know better. Just look them in the eyes and say, we're gonna do it anyway. Gonna do it anyway. Something inside so strong.